traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Welcome, equestrians of all breeds, to the International Equine Network. I'm Scott Miller, founder of the International Equine Network, and the only sole employee that we have here is me. We're looking for people to come in and help us and get some people to come in to do stringer work for us and interviews and different things like that. So give us a call at IENTV.org. On today's show, what we're going to talk about is for the next 10 weeks, actually, we're going to take one specific part of the International Equine Network, and we're going to spend the whole hour talking about that project and what it is and where it's going, and we'll have the format of the show, and we'll have the videos, and we'll have, you know, the whole nine yards as far as, you know, radio and television broadcasting is concerned. And on today's show, we're going to start out with something that's been near and dear to my heart for a long time. I've been thinking about this for the past 25 years. My participation in the thoroughbred industry has been a little bit all over the place. I've hot walked, I've cleaned stalls, I've groomed, done a little bit of everything that you could do. I've been in management in the equestrian industry for the thoroughbreds. Transportation, both land and sea, and air, sea being in Macau. So what we're going to do is called How They Get There, the 2021 Kentucky Derby. And we're going to go through the process that gets a horse to the Kentucky Derby. We're going to discuss a lot of areas. We're going to inform you on a lot of areas. And then, we're going to follow one horse to this year to see if he can make it to the Derby. And then we're going to follow another horse that I'm going to be buying into the syndication of and follow that horse to see if it gets to the Kentucky Derby. We're going to go through each part of the process, and hopefully we'll get people to start calling in and talking to us and telling us their story about how their horses gets to the race. And as you know, we talk about on the opening of the show, the journey starts here. And that's true. And all the people that I work for and work with, and all the old timers, and, everybody involved in the thoroughbred end of it, it all agrees pretty much. It's not the wins that you get, it's the journey that gets you there. You'll talk more about the journey and tell more stories about the people you saw, the things that you did, more than you will by winning, a certain race. And that's how we came up with the journey starts here. And so today, on How They Get There, the 2021 Kentucky Derby, we're going to start out where it starts. It all starts with the owner. The owner comes in and he's the one that's financing the project, buying the horses, and, kind of directing and making it all possible, for a horse to, get on the road to the Kentucky Derby. It takes a lot of money, takes a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience. And, out of the 33,000 foals that are foaled a year in the thoroughbred business, you're looking at only 20 that get to the Kentucky Derby. And most of the people that run in the Kentucky Derby have never been there before. It's a chance in a lifetime, and a lifetime is a chance, as they say. And so, it starts with the owner. He comes in and he kind of figures out what he wants to do, whether he wants to go to the sales and buy a horse, whether he's breeding horses on his farm, the homebred, as they call it, whether they get into a syndication of a horse. There's several different ways that an owner can, start this process, that type of thing. There's a lot of owners now that back in the day that were the sole owner of the horse. What they would do is they would have their own farm. They would breed a horse and from their stallion to their mare, and then hopefully they would, be on the right track. But just because you have a good stallion and a good mare doesn't mean you're going to have a good racehorse. If that were the case, then everybody would be, breeding good to good, and, everybody would be racing. But that's not necessarily true. That doesn't happen all the time. So then that's when the options come in for the owner. He sees what he has at home. If he has something that he can bring along and might be able to bring along, he can get it into training. The thing about that is a good owner has to know when to say no. Everybody would like to run in the Derby, take that journey to the Kentucky Derby, but there comes a time and point as a horseman and as a businessman that you have to say, gee whiz, I just don't think this horse is going to be able to, to get in that kind of, conditioning to get to the Derby. It might be a good allowance horse, and it could be a claimant horse. If it's a mare, it could be more valuable as a brood mare opposed to, running, in all the top stakes. So there's a lot of things that go into it from the owner's standpoint. And that's just one small part of it. How he gets going. Sometimes they'll see there'll be partnerships where they get two or three of the partners together, and they buy a horse and get on the road. And then there's the syndication. They might syndicate a horse for a lot of money to cover all the expenses and to get them down the road and not have to worry about it, paying for it through the syndication. And having said that, then you get into disagreement. Does he run, go for the Derby? Does he go for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile? Where do they start at? So, that's another factor. You have other people, that have a decision-making process as a part of that ownership. And sometimes syndications can be good. Sometimes they can be quite trying, we might say. And so, again, staying on the owner. After the owner has selected a horse and he gets a horse up, you're talking about nominating the horse to the Derby, to the Triple Crown, to stake races. There's a lot that goes into that. A lot of money, a lot of payments. Hopefully your horse does good. And so you make those payments. You get them nominated to all the big races. And once you start thinking about nominating him, then you got to think about a trainer for the horse. What trainer would fit your horse, running style? How does that trainer train his horses? Is he solid with them? Has he been there before? Has he done that? There's just a lot of things going in. Does the trainer click with the owner and the syndicate? That type of thing. And so that's another thing that the owner has to do before you even really get going, down the road. And then once you get your trainer, you start thinking about, what about a jockey? You have to decide on a jockey, what jockey fits the horse. Is he solid? Has he been there before? Has he done that? Is he up and coming? There's a lot that goes into selecting a jockey. And again, it goes back to being with the trainer and the syndicate. You have to come together as a group decision now. It's just not one person generally that's, making all the decisions, to run the horse. So now you've got the group deciding and you select the jockey. And then you sit down with the trainer and you sit down with the jockey and you evaluate the horse. Where is he at? Is he doing his works good? Is he coming along good? Is he gaining weight? How does he handle, the track? How does he handle, a crowd? How does he train in the morning? There's a lot of things that go in there that all these eyes that are on him, have to come to an agreement and say, well, yes, he is a good horse. How good yet? We don't know because he hasn't raced yet. So now you start looking at working him into his first race. And it goes into a lot of thought. This is the most crucial thing in the world for a horse run, starting a race and headed towards the Derby. Where do you start him at? So if you're looking at the condition books, you'd like to see him start at a good track like a Churchill or a Belmont or a Saratoga, Del Mar, that type of thing, because that usually indicates the fields are quality, that you're not going to get a cakewalk. And you want to get a catch an easy race in a condition book, opposed to, going in there and banging heads with, some of the best that there. So you got to know horses of that age, where they're at, who's training what, and keep your, information going on a daily basis and where you should go with your horse and all. So that's very crucial. And the other thing that the owner and the syndicate and the trainer have to think about is when they're starting this journey, they got to do things that will help develop the marketing ability of the horse. In case he does get to the Derby, you want to make sure that he has a good, solid, track record. That he's been there, he's done that, he's gone through the big tracks, he's run against the big horses. Because that all becomes an important thing for an owner because of the breeding aspect of it. You want him to have a good record of running, good record of winning, good record of winning the Derby. All of those things you have to look at giving the horse a good shot at the Derby. You're looking into that, it comes into the value of the horse, is the breeding of the horse. Can he go long? Can he go short? Theoretically, you breed distance to speed and you get, a good horse. Or you breed speed to distance and you get a good horse. There's not a real for sure way to do this project. So you just got to kind of go and let the horse tell you what he's doing and where he's going. That's one of the things that I've always got confused about is how, when, and where do you get your horse going in that first race? You can't let the Derby cloud your decision making. You got to place the horse where he can win. You want to place him hopefully in a spot like I said before, Del Mar, Churchill or Keeneland, Saratoga, that type of thing. Because that gives you confidence. You can build the horse's confidence up by knowing that, it's not going to be a cakewalk for him and everything. So, that goes on to it. And then you have to plan out your whole year. You got to come back and now with the Kentucky Derby like it is, you're looking at the Kentucky Derby prep races. You're looking at a series of races that actually started, back on September 5th with the Iroquois at Churchill. And then, it progressively goes around the country and around the world, to it. Where do you go? What do you do? Like now, we're coming up on the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Keeneland on November 6th. And, that's a real good litmus test of what kind of horse you have, because, you're down to probably 8 to 10 horses, and at this stage in the game, they're the best in the country. They've been, they're all pretty much winners, that type of thing. And so now you know. You know what kind of horse you got. If you run good in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and then you sit back and say, hey, man, maybe I got something. Here, this horse did real good. But historically, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile has not produced horses that were that solid. I mean, they're good horses, and they went on to do good things. But they weren't quite up to the power that you would hope that they would be. And because it is a tough race, they are young. And they got a lot of growing to do between November and January, when they're doing that. So that's another tough one. We got horses that are running, all over the world. We've had, they're in the Curragh in Ireland. Longchamp. You know, the Belmont, they just had the Champagne Stakes back on October 10th. Tremendous field there, very good. And you can see now that they're kind of going in different ways, a different route. You know how you know who's who in the business, and so if you want to go to let's go back to Churchill for the Kentucky Jockey Club, you might run into the same horses that you run into in the Iroquois or the Breeders' Cup too. You know, there's a lot of things that you could run into, you know, at that race. But yet again, if you win that race, you've got to race over the track, which is the home of the Kentucky Derby, and so you know exactly what to expect out of your horse. You know, so now you say, oh my goodness, where do I go now? Another good race at Aqueduct is the Remsen. That's December 5th. That usually is a good test for your horse. It's winter time in New York. You got weather starts to play in the factor to all the races that you pick for your horses to go in. You're not going to get that ideal situation. Not saying that you're not going to get it, but you could get it. But so, you know, these are the things that the owner, the trainer, and the jockey and or the syndicate have to take into consideration. In every race, that plan changes depending on how your horse runs. You know, and so that now you start getting into, again, January 1st, the Drome at Aqueduct is a very good race to contest your horse. But again, we're talking about, you know, the winter time. You want to keep your horse in the cold weather, you know, all the time. All these things, again, go into all the decision-making. The Sham Stakes at Santa Anita on January 2nd is a great springboard for a lot of good horses. You're talking good weather, good track, good competition. And so that's one thing that I look at, you know, is where can you go? Then you go to Oaklawn Park, where they have the Smarty Jones on January 27th. That's a fantastic race. A lot of the people that go and run in Smarty Jones usually stay there for the races that are coming up leading up to the Arkansas Derby. And what's nice about that is you don't, the Hot Springs in Oakland, you don't have to leave Oakland. There's a series of races there that can keep you right at the top of the game, that it's good competition. The Arkansas Derby is close to the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, if you plan it right, you can be walking right up to Churchill without leaving, you know, Oakland. Then on February 1st, you're looking at the Holy Bull at Gulfstream. It's a fantastic race. If you've got a good horse and you can go and run the Holy Bull and come out of there in good shape, again, it's like Hot Springs. You can stay right at Gulfstream and keep your horse, you know, at the same track and get him right up to the Kentucky Derby. So that was a good one. Then you come back to Santa Anita again, February 6th, Robert B. Lewis. It's a tough race, and it could come up in good shape, come out of that, and really have a horse. So, you know, then we're back to Aqueduct again in New York for the Withers Stakes. Again, you're looking at winter time, and you know, how does that affect your horse? You know, what do you do there? But you can literally stay in New York all winter long and run top graded stakes. Then we're back again in Florida, the Sam Davis, and then February 6th. A lot of horses use that as a stepping stone to the Tampa Bay Derby, you know, or to the Florida Derby. Very, very good race, you know, that you're looking at. Then we have the John Battaglia Memorial Stakes at Turfway Park on February 6th. Weather conditions in Kentucky at that time of year can be brutal. But yet again, you might catch a good day, and that's a great race, you know, to see how your horse is doing. Then we're talking about the fairgrounds now. the Risen Star. It's a series of races that gets you to the Louisiana Derby. Usually the weather's pretty good in New Orleans. It's a good time of year. You know, you get some good competition and you can evaluate your horse. And going over all these races here, the point that I'm getting at is that you always want to have your horse in a competitive situation where you can truly evaluate your horse to see how he's going to do against quality horses, you know, day in and day out, as they say. And sometimes, you know, you might get in there and throw in a bad race, and then you say, well, you know, we're still going to keep on our journey and see what happens. If he runs bad, the next time, you know, we've got to reevaluate everything. And that's the whole part of this Kentucky Derby prep race is each week you're running and racing horses that are appointed to the Derby that literally can eliminate themselves by running bad or just, you know, not being able to run at all. You know, in that. And so, you know, you're looking there at the Risen Star at the Fairgrounds, February 13th. And then, again, part of the series in Oakland, you come out with the Southwest on February 15th. A lot of the horses you've seen, you know, prior to that might be running in it. And you know, it's going to be tough. And it's going to literally be tough. You know, it gets tougher and tougher as you get closer to the Derby. And then again, back at Gulfstream Park, the Fountain of Youth, that's really a good race. It tells you what type of horse you have and should you run in the Derby or should you ship out and go to Hot Springs to you know, run in Arkansas Derby. Kind of really know, you know, where you're at then. Then thing that I like the most, and I've always had, and I do not know why I like this. I guess it's because of the name of the race. I got to see the race live twice. It's the Gotham Stakes at Aqueduct, and that's in March 6th. And I just always remember growing up, you know, so-and-so won the Gotham Stakes. You know, he's on his way. So, you know, I kind of like that one, and I see a lot of good horses come out of that. A lot of times, a lot of those horses are going to be better, older horses as opposed to being, you know, a Triple Crown bound horse. Then we're looking at March 6th, also the Tampa Bay Derby. The Tampa Bay Derby is a tough race. The track is a good sandy track. If you got a horse that can carry at speed and finish up well at Tampa Bay, you know, you're live in the game. You know, you're on the right path. You know, you're ready to roll with that. And then another horse race that I saw three times was the San Felipe at Santa Anita. I always liked it because it had the West Coast trainers and, you know, the West Coast owners, and it was in California, and the weather was good. And Kentucky, you know, the weather wasn't so good in New York. But I like that race because you see a wide variety of horses. That's a race sometimes you can catch you catch two or three sprinters in, and they'll get out on the lead and you got to catch them, you know. And so it's a true test. A good variety of athletic horses of all distances, 7 furlongs to, you know, mile and an eighth. Usually. And then again, back to Oakland. It's a long, long winter leap. But every month, they've got something that's leading you to the Kentucky Derby, and that would be the Rebel Stakes on March 13th. You know, that's a good series of races out there. A lot of times, they have the races of split to two fields because they get so many horses that actually, you know, enter or nominate to the race. You know, so again, it goes back to the owners and the trainers and the jockeys. You've got to be selective in what you do. Get your pass set because you've got nomination fees to pay. And it's tough, you know, to nominate a horse that you don't know if he's going to get there or not. And so that's one of the things that you know, the owners and everybody have to take into consideration. And now we're getting down to last month or so to the doom, where you've got to really change everything that you're doing and evaluate your horse. And you've got to realize that, hey, are we going to spend the money to nominate and get into the Derby? How are we going to do this? Now it's time that major decisions are being made, and they're make or break decisions that you make now. Everything leading up to that pretty much is, the horse and luck. That's where it's at. You're looking at March 20th, the Louisiana Derby. You get that and you stamp your ticket to Churchill. March 27th, you're looking at the Florida Derby. Win that one, you stamp your ticket to Churchill, for sure. There's so many different things here that you're looking at getting close to the Derby. I tell you another one, we had a lot of sleepers come out of or the Sunland Park Derby. Sunland Park. That's on March 30th, which is really a fantastic race. You should run into strong fields out there. It's tough. You got a lot of thinking to do when you win the Sunland Park Derby, because there's a lot of other stake races you can go to after the Derby. By the end of March, you're looking at evaluating your horses, and you got to really be realistic about it. You pretty much know who's going to be going to the Kentucky Derby, and you got to sit down and say, can we win the Derby? Can we win the Derby? That's the big question that the owners, the syndicate, the jockeys, and everybody have to take into consideration. Because it means the horse's career from that point on, as far as the stallion's concerned, as far as races are concerned, it's very difficult at that time and point. And let me tell you something. I've been around enough derby horses for the people that I've worked for, and I've seen it on their face. It's really tough. Do we go to run in the Derby just to say that we've been in the Derby? Or do we go to run in the Derby to say, hey, we got a shot at it? That's the tough part about it. When you get out there, if you win the Derby, that's great. But I guarantee you the worst feeling in the world, and this happened with me, a horse called Albaba in 1982. We came in, and we were a co-favorite for the Derby that year. It was really a tough race. All the old-timers were there. And that's probably one of the last times you'll see a group of old-time trainers and old-school trainers being in the Kentucky Derby as a group. And I'll never forget, we had won the 1982 Kentucky Derby trial with a horse called Whiskapade from Miss Joseph W. Brown. And Billy Smith was the trainer. There, and Shane Sellers was our jockey. And we came in, there were three, at that time it was a week before the Kentucky Derby, and we had three horses in the race that had won major stake races, prior to going to the Kentucky Derby. So they were using the 1 mile Derby trial as a litmus test to decide whether to go to the Derby or not. So, we were a long shot in there, and I was taking the horse over to the paddock. And on the way over, I was one of the last people in the back of the group. Billy said, don't be there, right away, said the crowd and everything. He said, just take your time coming on over. And so I did. And on the way over, in the first turn, ABC Sports had their cameras all set up for the Derby. And on the way over, the cameraman says, hey, he said, our director wants to know, what's the name of your horse? And I said, he's the winner. And the guy and the cameraman, Andy Armentani, he said, hey, he said, what? And really, he said, what's the name of the horse? And I said, he's the winner. I said, his name's Liscopay. And so we get over and get him all packed up and everything, and we go out there, and the crowd's going crazy, and they load him up in the gate. It's a mile out of the chute at Churchill there. And next thing you know, there's just a wall of horses in front of him. And I said, oh, my goodness, I don't know how he's going to deal with this. And so they keep calling out, you know, the different horses on the lead, who they are. There was a horse in there called Laser Life. It was in there. It was just, I was feeling bad because I didn't think we were going to win. And the only call Liscopay got was at the wire, and they said, in the center of the track, it's all Liscopay. He paid $115.40 for a $2 bet. Nobody believed in it, but I did. And so that just made my day, to have that horse win. So now I'm thinking, we got seven more days to the Kentucky Derby. Liscopay was not nominated to the Derby because he wasn't meeting all the criteria of, what a good owner, a good trainer, and a good jockey, would say, yes, he does have a shot at the Kentucky Derby. So he wasn't nominated. They just don't nominate just to be nominated. And if you got a good horse, you're nominating. And if he's not ready yet, then you don't. So now we've got El Bobby. We've won the 82 Louisiana Derby with that horse. And Billy said he was really feeling good. And I'll never forget, I went over to the paddock. Billy looked over at me and he said, we've got a good horse there, son. He said, we're going to give it our best shot. And I said, I know. I said, Billy, he's going to give us all he's got. And then he said, I think we nominated the wrong horse to the Derby, meaning that he should have nominated Liscopay. And so we get over there, and it's a good field. I'm excited. We take him in. El Bobby, he packs up good. He comes out good. Don Brumfield is the jockey on him. And so we're excited. We've got a good jockey. I've got a good horse and everything. So they spring the gate, and they come out, and it's just a cavalry charge down the stretch, going to that first turn. We're laying back fifth or sixth, with him. Couldn't ask for any more. And then out of nowhere, there was a filly in the race called Cupa Collegione. And this little filly had so much speed in her, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. I mean, she comes flying down through there, and I said, oh, my God. And I said, I hope he doesn't hook her and try running with her. So what I hope for is that Don, which he did, he just keeps him right in line and keeps going after him. And after him, maybe she'll die off. Well, Don makes his move at the 3/8 hole. And unfortunately for us, she starts backing up down the stretch. And she's scattering horses everywhere. And she comes over and bumps into us and into El Bobby. And he wrenches his hock, but he finishes 11th in the race. And I was still proud of him because he did everything he could do. We're not using that as an excuse of why he didn't. It just wasn't our day, and we got beat by better horses. And so when I got back to the barn, we're talking to the jockeys and to the owners and everything. And that's all part of getting to the Derby. It's getting your horse prepped right and getting right there. So, we weren't complaining about it because we had a good week. The horse came back good, and we went on to have a good, successful older year with him. But, those are the things you got to look at. And then when is your last prep race going into the Derby? Is it the Arkansas Derby, the Louisiana Derby? Now they've moved the Bluegrass to April 1st, which is 30 days before the Derby. And that's usually a fairly good, race to tighten up your horse. It's the Bluegrass on April 1st. And then the West Coast people, if they're doing good all winter long, they're going to stay out in California, and they're going to run the Santa Anita Park Derby on April 1st at Santa Anita. And so that's good for them because it's 30 days usually from the Derby. You don't have to travel a lot. You're staying at your home base. And then when you you know, get ready, and it's time to go to the Derby. And then again, we keep going back to Aqueduct. Aqueduct's got the wood and the board. And if you stay in New York all winter long, you can make a lot of money, and you can, you know, not have to leave home, and, you know, come in pretty much loaded for bear for the Derby, which is good. Okay, and then finally, we have the Arkansas Derby, which is April the 10th. And for all the people that stayed in Arkansas for the series of races in Arkansas, you know, you win the Arkansas Derby, and you're right at a month off from getting there. So it's usually pretty good to see how your horse does. And then the oddest race of the whole Derby prep races is the Lexington Stakes at Kingman. That's April the 10th. A lot of trainers and owners use that as the last chance race to get your horse into the Derby. If you win the Lexington and King, you know, then that tells you you got a pretty doggone good horse. It throws you into to another decision making: do we go for the Derby, or do we go for the Preakness? You know, that's when you got to start making, you know, decisions for the second part of the Triple Crown. The toughest part of how they get there is making these decisions as you go. You know, you might run up the track in a couple of races and say, well, you know, we're not going to go ahead and go to the Derby. You know, we'll go to the Preakness or the Belmont. And, you know, then you realize that maybe, hey, I should have gone to the Kentucky Derby. But then, again, you know, it's a whole team effort of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it to get to the Kentucky Derby. A lot of decisions have to be made, a lot of different things like that. You know, and it takes a team effort to do it from the owners and send it to the jockeys and the trainers. You know, a lot of things need to be decided. And it's tough. You know, it's tough for them. And then one of the other things that we're looking on how they get there is, you know, we're talking about seed, for example. You got to think about when you're going to from one track to the other, you know, the seed, the change of the geography change. If you're going, let's say, you race one day, 1 week at Hot Springs, and then you go to California a month later, and then you come back to Florida, New York. You know, there's a lot of things that you have to factor in to where your horse is running and how he's running. He's got a lot of opportunities to run all over. Some horses ship very well. They'll ship very well. And, you know, they can go from coast to coast, you know, north to south, hot to cold. There's a lot of them that do that. And, you know, they can do that. Very rarely do you see a horse nowadays staying in the same, you know, training facility for 6 months, you know, to get to the Kentucky Derby. They usually travel a little bit. And the reason they travel a little bit is because they might see a very tough group of horses in Santa Anita, and they might try to get them out and thinking that they might catch a smaller or weaker field, you know, in Hot Springs or in Florida, you know, that type of thing. You know, so that's a big factor, you know, in what you're doing. But again, a feed. Feed has to stay consistent, and you have to get with a feed company that caters to you, that delivers their product to all these different tracks. You know, you want to keep them on the same routine, you know, that type of thing. And on how they get them, we're actually going to go into the number one feed company in the world. And no matter where you race your horse at in the world, you will be able to find and buy their feed. It will be there. And we'll identify that company in later shows, and we'll actually spend about a half hour watching them and talking to them on how they make their feed and, you know, where they go with it. You know, that's very important to your horse. Very, very important to your horse to stay on the same feed. Then another thing that we're looking at you know, with how they get there is your veterinarian. You know, the veterinarian becomes a crucial part of what you're doing because if something happens or goes wrong, you know, with them, you have to have access to them. A lot of the veterinarians usually stay at one track and they don't go back and forth. And so that makes them, you know, a big part of it, you know, and how they do that. And then one of the things that's very, very important, not I would say the most crucial part of the whole process and the journey to the Kentucky Derby is the blacksmith. The blacksmith, if your horse's feet aren't right, if, you know, if he's not put together real well, you know, it's crucial on the blacksmith. And the bad part about it is that on with the blacksmith, he doesn't travel either. So it makes it real tough. It makes it real tough. And, you know, a horse can't say, oh, boy, my feet are hurting me, you know, today. I don't know what I'm going to do. Where's the blacksmith? You know, that type of thing. That has to come from the eye of the trainer, the jockey, from the groom, you know, that type of thing. And you have to be able to stay on top of shoeing the horse, you know, right up to the dirt. You know, if he didn't have the feet on him, he ain't going to get anywhere, that's for sure. You know, and you go from there with him. The other thing that we're looking at is how do you decide and when do you decide to go to the Kentucky Derby? Again, it's not something that you can come in and say, okay, guys, we're going to the Kentucky Derby. It's a long process. You go back and you watch videos of the last races, all the prep races to the Derby. You take into consideration where the horse was at, what track, what jockey, you know, what groom, what exercise rider. You know, how many of these things were consistent? Did he have two or three exercise riders? Has he had two or three jockeys? If he had the same groom, same hot walker, the same feed, the same everything, he starts, you know, running down your checklist to see what was all consistent, you know, and what got him to run as good as he's been running, you know, that type of thing. And you've got to evaluate the competition that's going to be there, that's going to be in the Kentucky Derby. You know, Bob Baffert always comes loaded for Barry, you know, they have two or three in there. Same thing, you know, when you see a Wayne Lucas, you know, come in. Brad Cox is really hot now. He's got a lot of good horses, you know, running. You know, so you see what you have. And another thing, too, that I forgot to tell you about, on the way to Kentucky Derby, you might see, let's say the Arkansas Derby, for example. You might see a trainer send two horses there to run in the Arkansas Derby. And you look at the two that he's got, and you say, wow, you know, he's got a good shot at winning this, you know, because this horse has, you know, done this, this, and this. And then you see the second horse in there, and you say, well, you know, what the heck? You know, what's he doing here? You know, he hadn't done all that much, but maybe he's on, you know, on the upswing. Maybe he's getting better. Maybe he's doing something that we don't know about. And then yet again, you got to think about it. It's maybe the trainer has put the horse in there to really test the field. You know, I know a horse that, and I'm not going to say who it is, but she was a good horse. The one that Kentucky does. And I remember the trainer told the jockey, he said, go as far as you can, as fast as you can, for as long as you can. And he said, we'll see what happens. Well, everybody kept saying that this horse is going to back up down the stretch. It's got too far out in front. You know, it's going to split the bit and not make it. That didn't happen. That horse won the Kentucky Derby. And this goes to show you, you know, that there's no set rule of thumb. So, you know, everything, you know, is decision-making. I mean, you know, and so when you go to decide to run in the Derby, make the final payment, you know, get that last 2 or 3 weeks in to the Derby, set your training schedule, you know, make sure that everybody's going to be there and they can be there. Make sure the owners are happy, make sure the horse is happy, the jock's happy, the exercise rider, the groom, hot walker, you know, make sure everybody's happy, you know, is all on the same page. And then you can really start, you know, fine-tuning it. And then when you get about 10 days out from the Derby, it's all over with but the hollering. You know, you just got to wait the 10 days and get into the gate and get going. You know, out of that gate, hopefully, you know, you can win the Derby. And, you know, and it's exciting. So on how they get there, we're going to have a lot of good interviews. You know, we're going to interview the owner that we've chosen to follow to the Derby in 2021. We're going to have a good sit-down, 30-minute talk with them about, you know, how they get their horses to the Derby. You know, the pressure that's on them. I know one owner that I was involved with getting a horse to the Derby, and the toughest part, he said, was every time the phone rang, when he'd leave the farm and leave the training facility, he said he was more tense when he left the farm or the training center than when he was at the track. And he said the reason that happened is because every time the phone rang, he didn't know if it was going to be the vet, it was going to be an assistant trainer, or the trainer calling and saying, hey, we got a problem. You know, he said every time the phone rang, he said that he couldn't get it out of his head. But he had great people working for him, never had a problem before, you know, but it was always that thought, you know, that phone ringing and that phone call that you don't want to get, you know, for him. So once you decide that, you know, it's time to go to the Derby, those last 10 days are usually pretty good. You get to socialize a little bit, see the owners and trainers that you normally don't see, you know, and where you train at, you know, year round. So that's one of the things, you know, good about Derby week. Let me tell you something. I've been there and done that, and Derby week, you don't get to go to see Thunder over Louisville. You don't get to see the boat races or the parade or, you know, participate in a lot of things because you're taking care of business. And I had a lady tell me one time, she said, you've been around a lot of derbies, haven't you? And I said, well, I've been to 18 derbies in my lifetime. And I said, you know, the funny part about it is when you work on that backside, you don't get to see anything, you know, because you're working with the horses. And, you know, you don't get to enjoy everything there. But it's nice, though. It's a good feeling to be there, you know, with these horses and these owners. And the great part about it is that it's that journey that gets you there. It's what you talk about, whether it's in Arkansas, Florida, California, Kentucky, New York, you know, it does it to. It's all about the journey. And back to the 82 Kentucky Derby with Al Bob and finished 11th. It was really great because we were on a roll with our horses there in 82. And, you know, every morning you get up for those 10 days, you're coming out, there's cameras, there's photographers, there's interviews, there's ABC Sports, there's ESPN, NBC, everybody's there. And they're waiting, they're just trying to get something, you know, in the horse room. You know, what does El Bob like? Does he like apples? Does he like candy? You know, does that cat always stay in the stall with him? You know, those are the things that you're looking at. And, you know, it's so exciting and everything. And I'll never forget going over to walking El Bob over for the Derby. The crowd, I saw people that I'd never seen, you know, in 20 years, and they're yelling at you, you know, and they're telling you good luck, and it's people that don't even know you. They're telling you good luck, your horse looks good. So, you know, it's an adrenaline rush, you know, and then you get into the paddock and you have all the best horses in the world, you know, man, and you're a part of that. You know, you're a part of history.
And I'm really big into being, you know, the history of the horse industry. And so you get the saddle on the horse, and you're walking around in the walking ring, and then when you walk out through that tunnel and you hear them play My Old Kentucky Home, you just really get to me. You walk out and you see the infield, you look up and you see Millionaire's Row, and you know, you just, it's just a phenomenal feeling, you know, to it. And so, you know, I'm sitting in there, and I gave little Bob a little pat on the head, told him to come back safe, and which he did. And I had a small injury, but he came back safe and everything. And so it was the greatest feeling in the world. And so at the end of the day, we go back and we have a nice barbecue, and I have, you know, just kind of relax. And then I go home. And I get up the next morning like I've done every day for the whole year. Yeah, I got up just as normal. And I'm driving over to Chocho, and next thing you know, there's no cameras, there's no interviews, there's nobody. You know, you're just another horse. You're all over at the winner's board, you know. And so, I mean, you talk about a big letdown. You know, it's crazy, you know. And then after all that's said and done, either Sunday or Monday, you're headed out to Pimlico to go for the Preakness. You know, and then it starts all over again. And it's the same enthusiasm at the Preakness as it is the Derby. You know, you got that hope, you got that dream, and the journey continues. You know, you see a whole set of different horses most of the time, but it's still the journey. You know, they get you there. And so then after that, either you win or run real good, and then, you know, you're looking at the Belmont Stakes, you know, 3 weeks after the Preakness. And that's a whole different animal in itself, because you're looking at a mile and a half. And that's awful tough on the horse. You got to have a special horse for that. And that's why you don't see a lot of horses run all the Triple Crown races, because it's a tough road to go, all the prep racing. You know, you get on that journey, and it's tough. It's very, very tough. And if you're fortunate enough to have a horse that can get you to all three of the races, then that's a win in itself right there. You know, because you got a horse that can run against the best horses in the country, you know, at three different tracks, three different distances. You know, that makes a big difference. So, you know, again, it goes back to the owners on how do you get them there. You know, you got to think about the financial value of your horse. You know, if you got a horse, hey, you can go and run second and third to all you want in the Derby, Preakness, and the Belmont. And you know what? That might tell the, you know, buying public that, you know, you got a horse there that literally can cover it all. You know, you didn't win them, but it could cover it all. And a lot of times those horses end up being a lot better, you know, than a Derby winner, a Preakness winner, or a Belmont winner. You know, because you know that you can cover all the ground, any place, anytime, anywhere. You know, so that's really good, you know, for a horse to be solid like. And everything. But then it goes back, it starts with the owner. Got a lot of decisions to make. You start building your team. You want to be consistent. You want to have quality, you know, help, quality feed, quality blacksmith, you know, everything. And one of the things that a lot of people don't factor into it is the horse's travel. How do they travel when you ship to New York from Kentucky? You know, was the van ride good? Did your handlers take good care of your horse, you know, on the way up? If you're going back and forth to California like some trainers do, you might come to the East Coast two times, three times during the winter. You know, how did they do on the plane? Did they fly very well? You know, how does that affect? You know, just picking up and going, and then, you know, going back to California after the race is over. So, you know, those are things the owners have to take into consideration, what you're doing with them and where you're going. You know, it's tough. It is very tough. So, you know, it's a combination of a lot of things, trainers, owners, vets, blacksmiths, you know, jockey groups, exercise riders. We can talk a little bit about exercise riders and how they get there, because that's a crucial point. In there, you see the jockey, you know, on game day, but nobody ever sees the exercise rider. And I tell you what, the exercise rider is one of the most important people, you know, in the whole process. Because when he gets down off that horse, you've got to make sure that you've got an exercise rider that's not afraid to tell the trainer, you know, hey, Mr. Trainer, he's a little sore in that right shoulder. He's off in that left hind. You know, he was breathing funny. He was coughing. You know, see, and those are the things that make the team work. If you get a guy up on there and says, hey, oh, yeah, he went good. You know, he's a little sore, but he'll work out of it. You know, those are the kind of things that, you know, you got to tell the trainers. You know, so that's all part of the decision. You know, I'm going to the Kentucky Derby. And these decisions are made once you decide to go in. After the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, we're really going to let how they get there up. After the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, every week, we're going to talk with the owner, a trainer. You know, we'll have somebody different every week. The jockey, the exercise riders, the grooms. Because I want everybody to see how these horses get to the Kentucky Derby. You don't have to be a horseman to watch it. It's going to be entertaining. It's going to be informative. It's going to let everybody know exactly what it takes to get to the Kentucky Derby. You know, the most exciting part about it is how we're going to open up the show. I've already filmed. We pull up to a farm that we're going to be following to the Kentucky Derby. We pull up in an 18-wheeler, and the driver gets out of the 18-wheeler, starts walking towards the barn. Up at the barn, you see the owner, you see the trainer, you see the jockey, you see the groom, and you see a little kid. And the little kid comes running out of the barn and says, are you taking our horse to the Kentucky Derby? And the driver said, yes, we are. We're going to the Kentucky Derby. Then the little kid says, how do we get there? And how do they get there? And so what I do is we start going through what we just talked about today, the owner, the trainer, so forth and so on, all through. And then at the end of the training period for how they get there, we go back to the board. And they look at each other, the owner, the trainer, jockey, everybody. And they said, are we going to the owner says, are we going to the Derby? And you see six people give the thumbs up, say, we're going to the Derby. And so once the decision is made to go to the Derby, at that point, the groom puts the shank on the horse and gets ready to put him on the van to go to Churchill Down. And then what I do is I go to a mini cam on the horse's halter. So from the ride to Lexington, Kentucky, down to Churchill Downs, see what the horse sees. See all the people wishing him good luck as he leaves the farm. You see what he sees going down the road as he looks out the window. When you pull into Churchill Downs, you see Gate 5. You see the people there. You see all the barns. And when we unload him off the van, he comes down the ramp and he sees all the people with the cameras and taking the pictures and the whole nine yards. And then when he heads to the barn where he's going to be at prior to the Derby, he sees the Twin Spires, and that's how they get there. So it's going to be interesting to see what we're doing and how we're doing it. We've got a great narrator. It's not going to be me. Thank God. We've got a great narrator for the documentary. We're going to have a fun time with it. There's a lot of things that we're going to do. And then next week, we're going to talk to you about the horse that I'm buying into and part of my syndication. And we're going to talk to an owner that does syndications for $30 and $40 million. So that's what we're going to do next week on next week's show. We're going to start out talking to the owners about how they get there, what their game plan is, and we'll have that. And then we'll also have our Breeders' Cup show. So we'll have the draw is for the Breeders' Cup races on Monday, And we'll have that kind of a handicap and go over the whole Breeders' Cup card on Thursday. Plus, we'll talk to the owner of how they get there. So that's about it for us today. Give us a call at IENTV.org. If you want to be a part of what we're doing, if you got some equine information, no matter what breed you have, just send it to us. Let us know if you got video, if you got a sale coming up, if you got a horse for sale. Call us at IENTV.org, and we'll see how we can help you and where we're at. But, I appreciate anybody that listened to me today, Bill Gunn, I appreciate it and everything. So just give us a call, and we look forward to meeting with you guys next Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock for the International Equine Network and how they get there, the 2021 Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup preview. Thanks. We'll turn it in.